So I'm here with the esteemed Dave Rogers, a.k.a. Professor Bebop. Professor Bebop, what is your origin story?
Well, actually, I was in school at UVA, and WTJU existed, but at that time, it was basically playing classical music. And so, like many people have done who come here to Charlottesville, after I finished school, I left and I started teaching, and within 3 years, I was back. And when I came back, and I would come back up here to see some friends, but when I came back, didn't have like anything to play music in the car except the radio. So I was constantly twisting the dial for this, that, and the other, and hit upon TJU Rock on Friday afternoons. That was it for the rock type music that was being played during the time. After I got here and got moved in and so on, I just decided, well, maybe I'll come over and check the place out and see what was going on. So at that time, we were in Humphrey's dormitory basement. And so I went in and sat in, actually with a very good friend of mine, Russ Perry, who is doing the Jazz at 100 series. I sat in the studio with him and just we kind of talked music a little bit. And he was playing a variety of things. And I thought, oh, this is going to be a lot of fun. So I started asking about, well, how do you get in on this? He was still a student at that time. But he said, yeah, there are some people that are not students that are in the station. So this was probably in, July or something like that. And so when the station opened up for the full-blown, come on in and check it out situation, I came in to see if I could get a show. And so I did get a show. But it was just like I was doing a radio show. And over a couple of years, I was just interested in older music for a while. So I was picking up a lot of old vocal group music and some old jivey kinds of music. And I would slip that into the show here and there. And then another very good friend of mine who was here for a long time, doing engineering and did a lot of things for the station. He created a lot of shows. But at one point, he just passed me this magazine, which was like a trade magazine. I don't remember. I think Warner Brothers or something sent it out on a monthly basis. But he said, since you're doing all this kind of stuff and playing all this older music, and this was like music from the late 40s and very early 50s, you might be interested in this article. So I read this article, and it was about a guy, Laveda Durst was his name, who had been a DJ in Texas in the 40s. And he was one of the jive-talking, hipster kind of DJs. And in the article, this guy mentioned that Durst used to sell these little dictionaries of jive. And so I wrote him. He had been an R&B piano player and now was doing radio as well. It's kind of a part of what was going on. So we had some discussion back and forth. And eventually he sold me. He didn't give me money. He sold me a copy of his pamphlet, which apparently, he sold on the air, too, so people could buy it from him. And so I sent him $5, and he sent me the thing. And it had a bunch of little jive routines in it. And so I would use them initially as kind of my start and decided the idea was that I'd like to do the kind of show that he had done, except he had done a very commercial show. And, of course, we didn't have commercials. So I would do music of the era, but then I would also use some of the jive lines and this, that, and the other to do the segues between. Yeah. So that's where it all came from, and I've been sort of doing it and wandering away from it and back through it ever since then. So that probably was, maybe 5 years after I started here. So that would have made it, about 1977, 78, somewhere in there when I started doing that. Professor Bebop. And I just, Laveda Durst, by the way, his radio name was Dr. Hepcat. And so I thought, well, I ought to have some sort of a radio name to go with this whole thing. And thinking about the university is kind of where the professor came from. And because I like to talk a lot, some other reason, I suppose. And then I thought the bebop thing just kind of fit with it. So there it was. And the timing was kind of right for bebop music, too.
Yeah, very neat.
That's its beginning.
All right. You mentioned 44 years. Is that right? So now, what is it about TJU that has kept you here?
Well, right from the very beginning when I visited the station, it was about the idea of anything goes. I mean, there's music out there, and you can have complete freedom to explore whatever. And so the first people I met were just crossing genres left and right and doing all that. And I'd like to do that on my own anyway. I was a record collector as it was. And, you know, we'd have, like, parties or something, and people would, you know, we'd be swapping, oh, listen to this, oh, try this, and so on and so forth. But coming down here and doing it as a program was really exciting. And very quickly, I mean, coming in, there were some things I knew a lot about musically, some strands of music, and there were things I did not know much at all about, and still are, to be honest. But it was like within 2 weeks of being involved with the station at all, I went to somebody's apartment and just sat down to listen to some music, and I got introduced to the recordings of Robert Johnson. And I had listened to a lot of blues, but not a lot of folk blues or the old blues. I was listening to electric blues. So in the same evening, I was introduced to Robert Johnson's recordings and Ornette Coleman, you know, and it was like, boom, well, all right, we're off the scale on both ends. And it was just like that all the time. You're constantly hearing things that were just exciting and really interesting to check out that you maybe didn't even know existed. So the idea of being able to share that with people but not having to say, come over to my house, you know, and the room of us will play the game or whatever else. But to be able to put it out on the air so that people could hear it was just really, really exciting and fun to do. I've never lost the sense of joy about being here. I've met lots and lots of people, obviously, over the years. And, you know, people keep stretching and they turn it this way and they try new things and new forms of music come in and everybody's happy to share what they know about. And so it's just like a walk through Wonderland. You know, it's this sonic Wonderland that we're in. And I've never felt tired of it.
You mentioned having your show on Friday night for a super long time. Mm-hmm. So now, what precipitated that move to Tuesday morning? And how would you describe your show?
Well, all right. You know, when Charles Peel decided he was going to give up the show, I guess there was some discussion around. I mean, I've been doing it for a long time. And so the jazz director, David Eisenman, came to me and said, so Charles is leaving. He's going to retire the show. And what would you think about taking it over? So I said, well, it's like on Tuesday morning. You know, it's not late Friday night. I mean, what are you saying? I could do my show? And because if you're not saying that, you know, I liked Charles' show just fine, but that wasn't me. And I enjoy jazz a lot and play jazz a lot, but I need to be sure if you're saying to me what I like to come to Tuesday mornings and be able to play whatever I'm going to play, then that's interesting to me. And it's, you know, it was an hour longer than what I was doing, which was nice. And frankly, you know, 30-some years of 11 to 1 on Friday nights is plenty. And so, but that was just kind of the thing, was the idea I could do the same thing, try it with a different audience, because I was quite certain it would be a very different audience from the one that was listening to me late at night. And so I thought, well, that would be kind of fun, so let's give it a go. So we did do that. That's what made the transition. But then they didn't have anybody to cover my show. So for a while, I did both of them. And that kind of gave me a chance to get used to doing the Tuesday morning slots and for Charles's audience to go through the morning period. And, you know, so it was interesting in that way, and just to see how what I do might strike a different audience. And so I thought, you know, it's time for a change. That's probably a good thing. Let's give it a go and see how it works. And it's been fun. And I've tried to make some bridges right from the get-go to that audience, or at least a segment of the audience. And I think that's gone reasonably well, although the sort of pop side that Charles was playing, I haven't tried to duplicate, because I don't see how I could possibly do that. He does it so well. But anyway, that's really what kind of brought it. So I've been enjoying it a lot.
Earlier you mentioned like the Jive pamphlet that you got. Mm-hmm. So how is the personality of Professor Bebop different from the personality of Dave Rogers? Are they one and the same, or...?
You know, no, we're not really the same at all. In some ways we are. I'm talkative, and I guess the professor's pretty talkative too. But I'm usually a little more withdrawn, I suppose, or I don't know, I guess just conservative in my talk or whatever else. And so that's one thing. And I don't have a lot of musical knowledge, but you know, I couldn't fill the real professor's shoes, that's for sure, because he was just in the know. He was one of those hep cats in the know, and so he was on the cutting edge, you know, of what was happening. And this is either, you know, this is dead time, this is old, not so good, we're not messing with that, this is where the happening is, this is the jive, and so we're going to be hip or hep, and we're going to know which one to use, and all of that kind of all of that kind of thing. That was the professor, so I had to work on it in that regard. And I used to write out initially, I would write out things that I would plan to say on the air and just read them, which helped me keep my focus on what some of the lingo was, you know. And now it's sort of hybridized, and so it's just sort of fumbles out of my mouth whenever I say something with it. But,
yeah. So now, how has that personality changed?
It's changed in a number of ways. The actual lingo that I use is not probably historically enough accurate, because when I started off, I was using Mr. Durst's era of jive talk. And so that would have been late 40s, and the style of jive talk existed well before. I mean, Cab Calloway was jive talking back in the 30s. And then there was like this sort of beatnik or jive talk beyond into the 60s and so on. So what I do now pretty much is, you know, a mesh of those things. But in the beginning, it was pretty specifically to the 40s. And there were a lot of, you know, stack your pins on the curb and feature this creature kind of thing. That's a very specific hip way of saying, hey, hold up and pay attention to me. I got something to tell you. You know, so you learn that, but it was kind of in the vernacular at that time and gained or lost favor as time went on. So, and they're great jive talkers of all through the times. You know, Slim Gaylord's one of the best, but certainly a number of others. Mez Mezro, even back in the 20s, a jazz player back in the 20s, was into a lot of heavy jive talk as well. So there it was.
Yeah. So now, how does that sort of mirror TJU, and what changes have you seen come
about?
Well,
a lot. You know, we're a much tighter organization than we were when I first joined. It's always been fun, and so that's been one of the great things about it. And we've always had a lot of leeway, or total leeway, really, with what we play. But I think we probably take the programming more seriously than we did, and so there are fewer times when people just kind of come in and wing a show. You know, I'm grabbing this and throwing it on and what's next and all that. Even though people do a lot of free form stuff, there were more people just coming in and grabbing and playing. That's one of the things. So I do think we're more serious about it. The diversity of the music that we're playing, even though it was really diverse compared to anything I'd heard on radio when I started, is way beyond where we were as well. And so, you know, it's really like anything goes, basically, and any kind of genre of music that you might think about or anticipate, you're likely to be able to find at least one show or that you know will touch in on that particular programming, so in that particular style. And then the mix of what people do. So those are things. There are also like challenges that people would do that were just a lot of fun. Like when we started having marathons, which was really absolutely about raising money. And this was just kind of a funny happening, but I guess it was about two summers in, so it would have been about 75 in there somewhere. We're still in Humphrey's dorm, and we wanted to stay on in the summer, because at that time we were on just in the fall through the spring and then shut down. So we asked permission to stay on in the summer. And so whomever in the university had the authority to tell us what we could do, said, okay, but you're going to have to pay the electric bills. So that's when we ran our first marathon, which, maybe not our first, but as far as I know, our first marathon. And it was to raise enough money so we could pay the electric bill. So our target was $500, which was more than what we needed. But anyway, but we were able to raise that, which was kind of wonderful. And we thought at that time, we got to do something special, you know, so we can't just do a regular whatever happens program. So we did a lot of jazz in that particular marathon. And then we started to branch out. And then people would start to, like, make suggestions for other folks, you know. So it would be like, well, all right, so maybe you could do a show about food or maybe you could do a show about some other kind of topic. I think one of the ones I tried fairly early on, partly on a dare, was to try to use animal songs. So all the subject matter was about animals, but to create a history of rock and roll using animal songs, for instance. Well, I'm not sure it was a great show anyway, but it was fun and it was funny. It was kind of a wacky idea, you know, to do that. So those are, and those kinds of things were happening. You know, we were, as I say, we were so much looser, and our time on the air, like in the summer, was, it was crazy because, you know, we went on when somebody came over to the station and signed on, and we were on. And we went off when the last person at night just couldn't handle it anymore and just shut down. And that might be at 9 o'clock, and it might be at midnight or whatever, you know. So you didn't know exactly when we were coming during the time. It's a little, obviously, during the fall, it was more stable. And I think that was it. It was just, we're always about having a good time. And, you know, and how could we make the programming more fun or more interesting? Sometimes there would be like, you know, well, you might choose someone to play or a style of music to play, and I might choose a different style of music to play, and we'd do a little duel to see how we could either match up or overtake each other, or however that would go, you know. So it was really about a lot of fun.
Yeah. So now, do you think that is the secret to WTJU's success, besides like having fun, and also relating that to our system of volunteer DJs? Why do you think that's worked as well as it has?
Because I think almost without exception, the people who have been here love music, number one, and they love lots of different kinds of music. So and they really want to share it. And so, and we're pretty loose. I mean, some people don't care for every form of music that gets played down here, to be sure. But we, very early on, there were no problems about, you play this kind of music, I play that kind of music, and that's fine. That's interesting, and I'm interested to hear what you're doing. And I think because we had the freedom to make it work, you know, I can play this thing, whatever the style is, or I can play this, this era. I can represent this era or this style, or show how this style changed and who are the people that helped to change it. Those kinds of things, or the themes as well, that are fun, and how do we go about doing it then? It's more interesting to actually do as well as to listen to. I did a little tiny bit of part-time, like real radio, we used to call it. And, and it was just to try to see what that was like and so on. And the difference was pretty horrifying, actually, because we were so tightly playlisted. We were still in the era where you could actually choose the stuff, but there was like a wheel, you know. So the first song had to be something in the top 20, and the next song had to be, you know, something within the last year that had come out within the last year. And there were all these things, and there were a couple of fast songs, now something slow, and this, that, and the other. It was really that scripted out. Well, you learn some things about, you know, manipulating the controls and all of that sort of thing. But it's really hard to, I mean, the music becomes just the same thing as, well, I got this announcement I've got to read now. You know, it's, so I do think absolutely people here are passionate about lots of kinds of music or certain kinds for certain people. And they really know what they're talking about, and they really have a good feel for it, and they're really good about helping other people get into it and appreciate it, even if it's not their favorite kind of music. And I can't think of anything else that's kept this thing riding so well so long. And there have been, you know, a ton of people who have worked here over time. But it's the sort of place that it does shape you as you come in as well. But it shapes you in this way of saying, I don't come in here and just expecting to be this little tight person. If you want to do that kind of radio, there are places around here you can go do it. This is not it. You got to come in, open up, do some, you know, some exploring, and have a good time.
What is your best memory or favorite memory from your time at TJU?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many. I think I don't think I could even do one, but I can just rattle off two or three maybe situations. Tom Morgan, who was a disc jockey here for many, many years, he played a lot of New Orleans music, played a lot of rhythm and blues music, And he decided at some point he was going to leave Charlottesville. When he was leaving, we had a farewell party for him and actually had one of those New Orleans-type parades in his honor as he was going. Oh, that was a kind of a tremendous amount of fun. There have been some other kinds of crazy things that have gone on. I once interviewed an old blues man, Robert Lockwood is his name. He was the sort of stepson of Robert Johnson. And so everybody always talked this myth about Robert Johnson being the guy who went down to the crossroads and sold his soul to the devil for his playing and ability. So I'm interviewing Lockwood, and mostly about his career, because he played with all kinds of people on Chess Records, Muddy Waters and all these great folks, and plus making his own music. And we'd kind of gone through this really nice interview, and I couldn't help myself. So at one point, I said to him, well, Mr. Lockwood, I have to ask you, what about this story of Robert Johnson going down to the crossroads and, you know, meeting the devil? And it was just stone quiet. So I turned to look at him, and he had this look of horror on his face. And he just didn't say anything, but it was quite clear from his looking at me like, I can't believe it. You're working at a college and you're stupid enough to ask me this question. So it was a pretty thing. I mean, I jumped off the topic very quickly because it was obvious he wasn't going to chat about it, you know, or anything like that. And it was also obvious from the look on his face, like a little crazy. But the myth has, of course, continued anyway. So that was kind of a wacky thing to go on. I mean, we've had had a number of things. We had an engineer here a number of years ago who thought the place needed a little spicing up, and the board was breaking down, so he was going to build a new board for us. And he kept saying, you know, wouldn't it be kind of neat if when I built the board, it had these like blinking lights and things on it? And we're all going, well, yeah, I guess. And so sure enough, he customized this board where it was not only just the volume control and the various channel controls, but he had this little light system that was, you know, twinkling all the way. He built a cigarette lighter into the board because, you know, smoking was allowed pretty much anywhere at that point. There were a lot of smokers. And so we had our own cigarette lighter there in the board. Just kind of weird little things like that would happen around the station. And just a part of the personality. I followed a guy for a couple of years, I guess, Jinx Kern, who was a classical DJ. And Jinx played a really wide-ranging classical show. But he always ended his show every time with this rock and roll song by Buddy Holly called Peggy Sue. And I guess that was his transition to me, since I was playing older rock and roll and R&B at the time. But he was playing it before he knew what I was doing, you know. So it was just kind of a song he liked, and he just ended his show with it. And I thought it was just one of those kind of peculiar things that someone would do at the end of their show, you know, and it's completely unrelated to the type of music he's playing. So there have been a lot of characters down here, I guess, is the other aspect of what it's all about.
All right, last question. Okay. What is Professor Bebop's secret to happiness?
Well, my secret to happiness has to be two things. First, it has to be enjoy people. And hope that they enjoy you, but enjoy people. Don't look for their faults or don't look for what's wrong with them. Try to find good things that you can enjoy and hook on to that and let them know that you enjoy those things. And the second thing is don't go more than a few hours a day without listening to some music of some kind. And I spend a lot of time actually trying to fit in a certain number of hours a week where if I could take 30 minutes out on a certain day and just I did not do anything else. I wasn't reading. I wasn't like making a project or anything like that. Just listening to music and reach out and find out where the music's coming from and see if you can appreciate that. And it may not be your favorite kind of music, but you will certainly appreciate it more. And it just makes you feel good. I mean, there's no music I've ever heard that ultimately makes you feel grimy. I mean, you know, you feel something about it and it brings you out. And, you know, try to share it. That's basically the thing. And I just love doing that. So that's it. That's why the professor is still busting his buttons every time the man ankles into the studio and drops the needle.
All right. Well, thank you, Professor Bebop. Dave Rogers. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thank you, too.